I'm Cheryl Corley, sitting in for Michelle Martin. This is Tell Me More from NPR News. Coming up, Asian American journalists are gathering in Miami this week for their annual convention. We'll talk with them about how the media covers their community. But first, last week marked the 40th anniversary of the 1967 Detroit riots. While the city's downtown is beginning to look fresh with a new baseball stadium, a skating rink, and trendy lofts, the city is still trying to recuperate. There is an extremely high unemployment rate and pervasive crime, and many are asking the question, why is the recovery so very slow? Well, two people present widely different answers to that question in dueling Washington Post columns this week. Kevin Boyle is a professor of American history at Ohio State University, and Joe Hicks is vice president of Community Advocates, a nonprofit that works on race relations in Los Angeles. Boyle's opinion piece was published last Sunday. Hicks' column will be published later this week. And Kevin Boyle joins us from the studios of WCBE in Columbus, Ohio. Joe Hicks is in the studios of KPCC in Pasadena, California. Welcome.
Thanks very much for having me.
Well, let's start with you, Mr. Boyle. I understand you are a native Detroiter. 40 years after the race riots, what's the state of Detroit today?
An awful lot of the state of Detroit is really pretty grim. Detroit has the highest unemployment rate of any major metropolitan area. The poverty rate is very, very high. In many ways, Detroit is beset by a whole host, a whole tangle of very, very deep, profound problems.
You, in your article that was in the Washington Post, it was called The Fire Last Time, and the subtitle, 40 Years Later, The Urban Crisis Still Smolders. You've argued that the federal government is to blame for Detroit's difficulties. How exactly did the government fail Detroit and cities like Detroit?
What I say in the article is that the riots of the mid-1960s, and Detroit was hardly the only riot, was the worst of the riots, but they had one positive outcome from them, that for a period of time, the riots forced those in positions of power to really confront the deep problems that helped to cause the riots. And there was a flurry, and not a perfect flurry by a long shot, that attempted to address the problems of inequality and poverty in American cities. And then, sometime in the mid-1970s, those programs started to fall away. They started to unravel. And since then, there really has been no concerted national effort to confront the problems of urban poverty in the way there were for that really brief period of time in the aftermath of the riots.
Oh, well, I want to bring Joe Hicks into this conversation. Mr. Hicks is the vice president of Community Advocates and a radio talk show host. You have argued on a totally different front that you don't place the blame on the federal government. Where do you place the blame for cities that are in crisis?
Well, let me say I really enjoyed Kevin's piece. And maybe Kevin and I disagree about kind of the riots and they got attention, quote unquote, and caused the government to react. In fact, much of the, you know, kind of attention to America's racial issues were beginning to be put into place long before folks decided to burn buildings down and throw rocks at cops and whatnot in major cities. America was undergoing, I think, a transition. The civil rights movement had been in place since the 1940s. I mentioned in my piece that combined with the beginnings of white Americans beginning to really reflect on, well, what do those old grand documents, Bill of Rights and our Constitution, really mean? And if that's so, how can we be treating Americans who are citizens in despicable kinds of ways?
Well, you talk a lot about the cultural roots of urban dysfunction in your article. Can you elaborate? What exactly do you mean by that?
Well, I think black culture in America has been a rich and vibrant traditional piece that has sustained black people through some of the darkest times in this country. Slavery, Jim Crow laws, discrimination. When you hear, hip-hop folks talking about niggas and bitches and hoes, that's not black culture. I see it as a corruption, in fact, of black culture. And I think the kinds of things that Kevin identifies, the violence, the dysfunction in homes, people rejecting, in fact, education that had once been seen as a thing to propel people into success. All these kinds of things, I think, are now the descriptors of black culture.
You mentioned in your article, Joe, about the blaming the victim syndrome, which started in the 1960s when Daniel Patrick Moynihan came out with that report on the Negro family and what should be done. Sort of sounds like you're blaming the victims, too, or blaming the people, if not the
victims. Well, see, I don't see black people as victims at all. And I think that's part of the problem here is that we've got everybody from Jesse Jackson to Al Sharpton and Maxine Waters et al. The entire black traditional civil rights movement, a movement, by the way, that I was once a part of. I used to head the Southern Christian Leadership Conference here in Los Angeles. But I'd begun to reject that message very early on because I opened my eyes and looked around me and said, you know what, the country's changing. And we, quote unquote, as civil rights leaders, needed to offer a new recipe for the way forward. And I don't think that's happened. What I think has taken place instead of that is you've got traditional black leaders allowing people themselves and others to wallow in the sense of victimhood, that we're all victims of white America, and white America still, quote unquote, got its foot on the black man's neck, et cetera, which is why people like Juan Williams and Bill Cosby and others have backed away and said, you know what? Yeah, we haven't eliminated racism in the country. There's no nation in the world that's eliminated racism. But it has been reduced significantly to the point that we can no longer point our fingers at others and blame the ills of the inner city on others and not then look in the mirror and say, what is the culture doing that's created this pathology that we all know about, yet are sort of afraid in broader terms to really talk about?
Well, Mr. Boyle, Kevin Boyle, you are a history professor. I was wondering about your take on that and also about the call from Joe Hicks for a new recipe. And I was wondering what you thought the new recipe should be.
Well, I think that Joe raises a number of really important points. Where we really disagree, I think, is the question of why some of the troubling cultural trends are concentrated in the inner city in a particularly intense way, and how best to address them. I agree, too, that the civil rights movement of the 1950s and 60s, the early 1960s, did enormous things. And Joe, as he points out in his article, points to Brown versus Board of Education, points to the Civil Rights Act 64. Those are immense accomplishments. They accomplished enormous things. They broke down the Southern system of segregation. The problem really is that a lot of those advances didn't attack the Northern system of segregation, which wasn't rooted in the Jim Crow laws, but was rooted rather in a kind of de facto segregation that is still largely in place. So I think that the racial problem is real still. It's an institutional problem. I think that the dramatic disappearance of jobs in places like Detroit, and especially in Detroit proper, has had a terrible effect on the ability of people to find ways out of poverty. So I think that where our disagreement really comes down to is that Joe puts a greater emphasis on cultural transformation, whereas I put a greater emphasis on institutional transformation.
Kevin Boyle is professor of American history at Ohio State University. He joined us from the studios of WCBE in Columbus, Ohio. And Joe Hicks is the vice president of community advocates and a radio talk show host. He joined us from the studios of KPCC in Los Angeles. Thanks so much for being with us.
Hey, appreciate it.
Thanks for having us.